Empower Radio presents The Farkas Files, an exploration of energy, metaphysics, and the paranormal with David Franklin Farkas. The Farkas Files. The truth is in here, somewhere. Here's your host, David Franklin Farkas.
Good evening. Thanks for spending another Thursday evening with us. My guest this week is Brother Gary Joseph, who has an incredible story. He had a near-death experience where he had an incredible experience of the afterlife and came back, and that happens with near-death experiences, but his was fairly long. It was half an hour. But he still has those contacts, and he's been having them for years now. So I'm really looking forward to our conversation with Brother Gary. But first, as usual, our metaphysical musing. And every time we have a guest who really has an experience of a completely different reality, a completely different experience than our physical reality, it gets into this whole question that I'm constantly talking about and thinking about, which is, what is that difference? We have physical reality, which is our sensory experience, what's coming in through our five senses, what's going on seemingly in our heads, although there's a lot of evidence to show that it's not going on in your brain. And then there are lots of other realities that we, even though people don't think they experience them, everybody touches on it. Whether it's profound meditation or it's the time just before sleep or dream time, or having an experience of knowing something in a way that you don't think is possible, all kinds of different things where reality changes. And then there are people who do shamanic work, who go into an altered state of consciousness so they can do their work. And that altered state of consciousness is outside of physical reality. And when you step outside of physical reality in the sensory realm, there also is no time. So if you're talking about ghosts, if you're talking about almost any of the things that are non-physical, one of the things that's common to those, whatever they are, those alternate realities, is that there's nothing physical. We no longer have three dimensions of physical space. There's no mass, and there's no time. So when the physicists play around with that stuff, and they're looking at, when they talk about quantum physics, they're looking at things so small that there's no way to see them at this point. They can see the results of what's going on. So right now they're looking for what's called the Higgs boson, which somebody glibly called the God particle, although all the scientists hate that. And basically, what they're looking at is, why does our physical reality have mass? Nobody seems to know. And they're hoping that the Higgs boson is the subatomic particle that actually has mass, that creates mass, or in some way is responsible for mass, which means gravity, which means all the things that physicality is about. But outside of that, whatever that is that we don't understand is something that they call non-ordinary reality. Got ordinary reality and non-ordinary reality. And there are scientists doing hard science and studying both consciousness and the phenomenon of non-ordinary reality. What is the state in which people can know things that seemingly can't possibly be known, can see things at a great distance or affect things at a great distance, can get flashes of information from history that are totally accurate, or get flashes of something that's going on with a loved one that's totally accurate. And then they check it and say, yeah, indeed, this was going on with that particular person at that particular time. How does that happen? What is that non-ordinary reality? And physicists are also talking about parallel realities, that maybe there are many, many different possibilities. There are many different possibilities. And we experience one of them in our physical reality, but maybe there are other dimensions in which every other possibility is all playing out, which would be really, 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 really complicated. But why would there be a limit on it? And if it's all happening at the same time and time really isn't linear, then it gets really interesting and complicated to think about and talk about. But that's the realm that, as you know, if you're listening to this show consistently, that's the realm that my work is in. That's the realm that I like to think about. And that's the realm that we try and find guests to talk about. Because there's such a broad range of human experience, which isn't what most people expect. And so with that as kind of an introduction, that's tonight's Metaphysical Musing. And let's talk to Brother Gary Joseph about what happened to him and the reality that he not only went into, but still experiences. Brother Gary, you there?
Yes, David. Thanks so much for having me here.
Oh, my pleasure. I'm sorry I didn't get your book earlier. I've only read a small portion of it, but your story is just fascinating. And I know the story is going to be interesting for the audience, but is there a way that you want to introduce what happened? I don't really know what you were doing before that experience.
That's a good question. I had been for about 25, 30 years, I have been a top-level human resource consultant, and I really loved the field. It took me to a lot of great five-star hotels, and I was able to just live great and not at my own expense, and got to really work on human resource issues such as customer service, management development, and customer service satisfaction measurements and surveys. So I had a great time doing it. Worked for some airlines, worked for some top universities in their hotel divisions, and I was having a pretty good life, but I was a workaholic and didn't really have much time to think about the metaphysical, did not really have time in my schedule to think about God and if he existed. But that all changed in 2005. In just a short window of time, some doctors had figured out that they missed diagnosed. They thought it was all in my head, the symptoms, the illness that I was describing. And they sent me home after 2 days in the hospital. That was in spring of 2005. And then in June, the doctors called back and apologized. They said, UCLA student was looking for work to do and discovered your file, and they discovered your illness. So that was good news that a student actually pieced together what was wrong with me. And they said, we think you have cancer. And at the same time, my business partner and very close friend, my cousin Kim, coincidentally, the same week I get diagnosed possibly with cancer and a tumor, she gets diagnosed with lung cancer, and they say, oh, she has about 6 months to live. So All of a sudden, I just started, you know, it's one of those days where you just start praying, whatever that looks like.
Right.
I started to think about prayer and the afterlife and what am I supposed to do here. So that kind of propelled me really to just make a daily commitment to meditation, to prayer. And I really was hoping for the best for myself and my cousin Kim. So that's kind of what kind of changed my path was that sudden news. And I think a lot of people could relate to that because that happens a lot in life, unfortunately.
Yeah, there are definitely those turning points where suddenly things you thought mattered don't really matter anymore.
All of a sudden, the next paycheck or the next great income or the next workaholic issue, all of a sudden those things just really become immaterial to the issue at hand.
Yeah. So you had this profound sense of your humanity and wondering what's going to be next, and then what happened?
Yeah, right after that, I got scheduled for surgery in mid-August and continued my commitment to daily prayer and meditation, spiritual reading. I was reading a lot of different spiritual works, maybe 2-3 pages a day. I was just searching for answers, and I continued that well into the end of September, and the doctor said I was healing pretty well. They took out a tumor from my throat, and it was quite large. They said it was the size of a golf ball, and they did a frozen C-section and said, well, the good news is it turned out not to be cancer, and it kind of surprised them, they said, because it was so large. And so I was really kind of on cloud nine after that. I was really pleased that I did not have to face that issue. And on September 26th, the night of September 26th, the early morning hours of September 27th, at 1 in the morning, I kind of woke up feeling a lot of energy. It was a few weeks after surgery, and I was going to camp out in the living room and just watch TV a little before I had to go to work in the morning. And I'm standing there in the living room in a pitch black. The TV and the DVD was in front of me. It said it was 1:15 in the morning I was going to really just kind of lay down there and watch some TV and fall asleep. And the next thing I knew, my heart took off very quickly without warning into just like I had seen a lion and I had run a race. And it was so fast, there was no time to really think about calling 911. Or people say, why didn't you call 911? Well, it just happened so fast. There was no time to do that. And the clock said 1:15. And what I remember most about those first few seconds was this enormous presence was just filling the room. And I wasn't really concerned about my physical condition. I was concerned about who is this enormous, gigantic presence just filling the room. And of course, none of us have been there. We don't know God. We don't know what his presence is like. And of course, it's confusing to us if we believe in him. You know, what is he really like? So that first time that began to happen to me, I didn't really know what it was. And I collapsed on the living room floor. And I remember my heart stopping. And that experience was very similar to when a noisy truck or a noisy bus, if you're riding in it, or a noisy, like in New York, you take the subway and all of a sudden they turn the train off and you're just sitting there and everything gets real quiet. Actually, that's what it felt like when my heart stopped. Mm. And I heard it go quiet and I was still in my body for a few seconds. And while I was still there, I remember all the energy going out of my fingertips, all five right, all five left. And also I felt the same sensation in the feet, all this electricity going out of the right and the left. And when that disappeared, the next thing that happened, I was above my body, above the DVD and the TV set, and I could see myself laying there. And I was at peace. I wasn't frightened or anything. But I continued to have this like really big experience of this presence, but I still couldn't put my finger on. I didn't know what it was. And the next thing that happened, I was kind of in front of a gray screen, similar to a screen door, but an enormous gray screen. And the gray screen was dense gray with little pieces of brilliant white light. The light was extremely powerful and luminous, almost like a razor, and it just cut through pieces of a screen. And that's when it occurred to me that I was with with God, whatever that meant to me, I realized this was it. And as soon as that thought came to me, I realized that the grace screen was there to protect me. I had that intuition that this gray screen is protecting me, because if the screen was lifted, I knew that I would just evaporate. I couldn't physically or spiritually or mentally, I couldn't handle being in the presence of who was on the other side. Mm-hmm. And so I started to say, glory to God in the highest, peace to your people on earth. I kept saying that over and over when I realized who it was. And that's when he began to talk to me, and I noticed that his voice is very different than the way we talk to each other. We talk kind of linear as we are now, and we kind of build thoughts and sentences, where I noticed what God does, he talks in kind of like if you took a dry sponge and held it under a faucet, and all of a sudden it would just simultaneously be filled. He kind of talks that way. And so I was kind of amazed at that. He was telling me that he was my father, more so than my father, who had died in 2003, that he created me, that he's a typical father. He said, I'm just like your father on earth. He said, I kind of look to you to have responsibility, to carry out your responsibilities in life, to do a good job at what you do, and to fulfill your duties of why I set you there on earth. So it was kind of a pep talk that he gave mm-hmm. me. And then I was so amazed at this, I asked him if he would let me see him. I said, can I see you? And his first reaction was no. He just said the word no. And then he kind of clarified. He said, no. He said, if you see me, he said, you'll be permanently dead. You can't see me.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of respected that and didn't ask anymore. And then the next thing that happened, he left, and I was left alone and kind of drifted through a black tunnel, kind of the blackness that a lot of people tend to describe that have near death. And when I was going through the black tunnel, I kind of initially was fearful, because the darkness is so dark. It's pure pitch black. And there's no telling where I was going. I didn't know that. And after I had the fear factor, the next thing that occurred to me was to have faith. I kind of said to myself, well, just trust that you met with God, trust that he can work this out, and that it's all going to be okay. And as soon as I remember having faith and thinking that way, then I landed on a dark planet, a black planet somewhere, and it felt good just to have my feet on solid ground. And to my recollection, it seemed to me that I was way out in the universe somewhere. It just seemed like a black planet way out in the pitch black night sky. And then all of a sudden, a small piece of light appeared in the heavens, in the sky above me, and I just kept watching this little piece of light, because to me it just seemed like security in the midst of all this blackness. And I kept looking, and the light grew. It grew so big, it was eventually the size of about 2-3 football fields, and it was a luminous, piercing white cross. And I just was mesmerized by. I just kept looking at this cross. It was like something out of another world, the way the light, it was similar to the light that was bursting through the gray screen. It had this kind of razor edge cutting quality to it. And so I kept watching, and then all of a sudden Christ appeared off the cross, And he came and he picked me up and he hugged me. And he just held me kind of the way your parents, when they put you to bed at night, he just kind of gave me that kind of hug. Mm-hmm. And I just remember thinking to myself, I just want to stay here. It's that old thing, I feel like I died and went to heaven. It was that kind of feeling, you know. It was like, I just want to stay here. I didn't miss being on Earth at all. And I told him, I don't know where I got this, but now somebody told me it was from the Old Testament. It was in Psalms. I said to him, a day in your presence is better than thousands elsewhere. And somebody later told me, I think it's in Psalm 84, that it actually says that. And I never heard that or never really knew that particular verse, but that's what I said. A day in your presence is better than thousands elsewhere. And I kept saying it over and over, and I was kind of trying to convince him that I wanted to stay there. And while I was doing that, I woke up in my body, and I was back in my apartment, and my heart was physically pounding off the chest, similar to when paramedics use the defibrillators. It was, it was, you know, many, many inches. My chest was pounding and pumping. That it only seemed to me that something powerful had restarted the heart. And to my amazement, I laid there and I watched my heart pounding like that and my chest being lifted. And I said to myself, gee, I didn't know that the heart could take that much. That was my reaction to it.
Right.
I was like, I didn't know that the heart could beat like this, you know. And so I just kind of laid there for about 15 minutes. And I was sweating, I was trembling, I had all kinds of physical reactions to having been on the other side, and yet I was at peace. I wanted to call somebody, and I kept thinking, well, who can I call? And then I thought, no, this is a bad idea, because don't call someone, it's 2 o'clock in the morning, and then they'll think you're crazy. So I had to sleep on it, and I actually started a journal that night. That was my first entry in what would turn out to be now about 6-7 years of a journal that I've kept of kind of these supernatural experiences that keep happening to me.
Well, let's take a small break. We're going to have a break for some public service announcements, but I want to make sure people know where to find you. And I also want to give out the phone number for people who might like to call us and join the conversation. So how do people get in touch with you?
It's I'd love to hear from people about, you know, these kinds of things. Of course, we do have a website, and it's by the way, all the money that's raised from the book, I was eventually called to help the homeless. So I don't own the book myself. All the money, it goes to help the homeless work that we do. So the website is called proofoftheafterlife.com. Pretty easy, proofoftheafterlife.com. But also, anybody can easily get the, if they just want the book, they can easily get it at Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble. And there's also Nook and Kindle formats, which they can get it downloaded in a minute or two and begin to read, you know, some of these kind of supernatural afterlife events that happened to me.
Terrific. All righty. Let me give out the phone number for people that might want to call in so they can queue up. It's 248-809-3475. 248-809-3475. I'll give that out again after the break. And we will come back to this absolutely fascinating story and the continuing story, because you've had a lot go on since then. So we will be back on the Farkas Files here on Empower Radio. Don't go away. Stay with us.
Mozart toasties are so very great. Kids rejoice when Mozart's on their plate.
They know they're quite nutritious
and so delicious.
They'll lick the dishes
and soon you'll realize how impactful your kids' involvement in the arts can be.
They'll get better grades, make more friends, and express their individuality. When they learn to play some music, act or paint or dance or write creatively.
Hot from the toaster and filled with the essential creative thinking skills of an 18th century musical genius, Mozart Toasties are an important part of an arts-healthy childhood. Studies show that involvement in the arts helps kids increase test scores and promotes academic achievement. Feed your kids the arts. For 10 simple ways to learn how, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. The arts. Ask for more. Brought to you by Americans for the Arts, the NAMM Foundation, and the Ad
Ranger
Council.
Ranger Station, Ranger speaking.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting.
Location?
In the woods, just outside of town.
Oh, not surprising. You've got your home. Bears have theirs.
Yeah, but see, this wasn't just any bear. This bear was wearing jeans and a hat, as in a Smokey Bear.
Jeans and a hat. That's definitely Smokey. What exactly did he have to say?
Well, we were about to head home, you know, after having a bonfire.
Oh, I can guess where this is going.
Right, right. See, Smokey told me the fire wasn't actually out. He said if it's too hot to touch, it's too hot to leave.
That's true. Did you know that 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans? That means 9 out of 10 wildfires can be prevented.
Wow, no kidding?
I'm a forest ranger. We never kid.
Sorry.
That was a joke.
Oh.
Get your Smokey on. If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference, because 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans. Brought to you by Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you.
Have you ever lost a cat?
Wildfires.
And have you ever wanted to get your cat back after you lost it? I'm Andrew Hoffman. I invented the lost cat magnet. Just turn it on and lost cats stick to it. Just listen to one satisfied cat. That's proof. You should invent stuff too. But remember, don't do a lost cat magnet.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions or just play some games at inventnow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation,
and the Ad Council. Energy efficiency interviews are brought to you by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Ad Council.
Matthew, you know energy-saving light bulbs last 6 times longer than that old bulb in your lamp.
Yeah, well, I don't even live here.
Matthew, dinner's ready.
I never met that woman.
It's your favorite, Matt. Lasagna.
Ugh, don't you people knock?
Just give me the energy saver.
Millions of kids are using their energy wisely. What's your excuse? Learn more at loseyourexcuse.gov.
Now back to the Farkas Files with David Franklin Farkas on Empower Radio.
And we're back. We're back with Brother Gary Joseph. And we're going to hear more of the story, but I want to give out the call-in number again in case people want to ask some questions and join the conversation. That number is 248-809-3475. 248-809-3475. So, Brother Gary, you were telling us what happened that amazing night that you survived. But I know that story continues.
Yes. David, it was something that I was not prepared for to think that, okay, this one experience that was phenomenal that I had to process because I was a completely different person 24 hours later than I was
sure.
The day before. So that I was still... processing. I was in another world, and at first I would go to the grocery store in the days that followed, or I'd stop at the pharmacy or something, and the person would just look at me, people who had never met me, never seen me in their life, and consistently one person after another would have these strange reactions to me. They'd say, "Who are you?" Like almost like I was from another world or something.
Mm-hmm.
They'd say, "Are you okay?" And they would just look at me, and finally I started to ask questions. I say, "What do you want? Why are you asking this question?" And they'd say something like, "Well, you know, you seem to be really at peace. who are you? What do you do? You know, and even the music group, I had been in a band at that time, and no one in the group had the courage to ask, because all of a sudden I was different at the next band practice. And then we had our Christmas party about 2-3 months later, and finally one of the lead singers comes up to me and he goes, "So what's your story?" You know, everybody was kind of like wanting to know what was going on and why I was behaving this way. So I finally started to come out and tell people what had happened to me. And by then, by December, I had all these other strange and crazy things that had happened. About 3 or 4 days after the near death, I had woke up on a Wednesday night by a loud voice at 4 o'clock in the morning, and the voice said real loud, like over a loudspeaker in my ear, and it said, "Your dad is very proud of you and your mother." And my mom was still alive at the time. My dad had died in 2003, so it had been a couple years since his passing. Mm-hmm. And when I sat up in bed, my dad was standing right in front of me. And I looked at him, I said, "Dad, is that you?" And he couldn't talk. He would just look at me, but he wasn't able to interact. Mm-hmm. And plus, he was very dark. Like, his skin was dark. He was kind of black and shrouded in black. And then he disappeared after about 10 seconds or so. And then I went back to sleep. I never called my mom, who lived some 2,000-3,000 miles away from me at the time. So I said, "I'm not going to tell her anything." The second night, on a Thursday night, the whole thing happened again at 4 o'clock in the morning, 2 times in a row. I wake up, my dad was right in front of me. And so I called my mom on a Friday, and I told her, I said, "Hey, look, this happened 2 nights in a row." And as soon as I gave her the words, the message, which was, "Your dad is very proud of you and your mother," I didn't know that she was harboring all this anger at him. She had never really talked to me that she was angry with him after he died. And she just started crying, and she said, "You know, your father never once in 63 years of marriage, he never said once to me that he appreciated me as his wife. He was not a grateful person." She said, "Now that he's dead and gone, he gets it." And she was mad. She was crying. And I said, "Oh, you sound angry about this." You know, I said, "It sounds like this is a message for you then, besides me, you know." And so we were kind of dealing with the fact that these things were happening. And then about 2 or 3 weeks later, I had signed up to be a volunteer with the homeless at an agency in the downtown area. And the lady that hired me, my kind of like my boss for the volunteers, she came in my office one day. I was doing job placement for the homeless. And she said in my office, she knows my name because she hired me. She says, "Jim." She shouts, "Jim," over and over, "Jim, Jim." And I'm thinking, this lady's crazy. She knows what my name is. Why is she shouting Jim? And she didn't say anything. She left the office. She shut my door. And then about an hour or two later, she came back and she did the same thing a second time. And she shouted, "Jim, Jim." And I was still learning the computer system, so I didn't really have time to kind of like find out why she was doing this crazy stuff. And I was really captivated by this job placement computer thing. So that's where I was at, and then all of a sudden, the next day, she calls me in her office, and she says to me, she goes, "I want to talk to you in private." So I went to her office. She said, "I have to confess something." She said, I'm a mystic, and I can see spirits." And she says, "There's a spirit that's been in your office yesterday and today, and his name is Jim. Now, she never knew that my dad had appeared to me. She never knew that I had the near-death experience. As far as what she knew about me was that I was just a new person that had come to be a volunteer at this 300-bed agency. And I said, Jim? She goes, yeah. She goes, his name's Jim. She goes, who's dead and whose name is Jim? I said, well, my brother is Jim, and he died in the 90s. And I said, my dad is Jim, and he died in 2003. She said, well, it's an older man, and it's definitely your father. And he is watching everything that you do for the homeless. He's curious about your work here. And that was kind of the start of all these things that just kept happening to me. That they were kind of, like, it wasn't just me seeing these things, but it was other people that were involved right. in the story, so to speak.
Right. Well, you know, there's part of me that says, welcome to my world, and a lot of the other people that I know, because that those experiences of people who have died and communication with them and having information there isn't a way to do, any real obvious way to know, is something that happens to a lot of people, but most people don't talk about it. Actually, that the presence of a relative or, you know, somebody who's crossed over at the foot of the bed looking dark is something that a lot of people have. But unless you happen to talk about ghosts, which I do, it's one of the talks I do, you wouldn't know that that story is really common, but I hear it all the time.
Yes.
And it usually happens between midnight and 4 a.m.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So, why that time, I don't know.
Well, there is a reason, I could tell you at some point, but I want to hear more of the story.
So, well, I think this thing about my dad, luckily there was a pastor that called. He had heard about my near-death experience, and he was also a film producer in Hollywood for a agency called Paulus Pictures. And they had been around Paulus Pictures since the early 70s doing work with Carol Burnett and all these people. So he calls and he says, you know, I'm kind of interested in your story. And he's so fascinated by it. He says, why don't we just keep meeting? Well, we kept meeting every 2-3 weeks, and we did that for 5-6 years. I've been seeing him. And he kind of asked me early on when I described these events with my father. He says, you know, it sounds like your dad needs help. He needs prayer. It sounds like... I said, well, you know, it sounds like you may be right. I said, because when he died, he was not in contact with any of his children. He had kind of cut off communication with all of us by his own choice. And I said, he wasn't really in a good place when he died. I said, in fact, I was the only one of his children that attended the funeral. I said, the others refused to go. Mm. And so my spiritual director said, well, you know, kind of pray about that, meditate on it, see what you're supposed to do. You know, maybe he needs prayer, he needs help. So I began to do that, and I began to kind of talk to him and pray for him. And one day, my spiritual director said to me, because do you think that when your dad is ready and he ascends, he goes to a higher level, presumably he goes to heaven, he says, do you think that God will let you know? And I said, well, that's a good question. I said, I really don't, I don't know if that will happen or not, because I had described an event. I was sleeping, this was in January of 2006. I was fast asleep around 6 o'clock in the morning, right before I was ready to wake up for the day. And all of a sudden, I had an out-of-body experience. I was living in a penthouse in downtown LA at the time. And all of a sudden, I remember leaving my body and going out through my bedroom window, and I could see all the skyscrapers of downtown. And I had no idea where I was going, what I was doing, but I was fascinated by it. And also, for me, I was felt comfortable with out-of-body because of what happened in the near-death experience. So this had been, I think, 4 or 5 months afterwards, so I kind of felt comfortable with this event happening to me. Mm-hmm. And the next thing I knew is that I took like a dive from over the skies of downtown. I took a dive into the earth. And all of a sudden, when I went into the earth, I was going through a very small, tightly compressed rooms that were made of those bomb shelters, cement blocks, really thick cement blocks. And the rooms were the size of maybe like a large walk-in closet. And I was passing in spirit one room inside of another, deeper inside the earth, and I got really frightened after I had gone through a few of those rooms, and I turned around and I wanted to go back to the skies of LA, and it was just dark and it was foggy down there, I remember, and all of a sudden Christ, he came alongside me and he put his arm around me. And he said, if you have faith, he said, you can pass through these walls and you don't have anything to be afraid of. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay, because he kind of brought my attention to the faith that I had when I was going through the black tunnel. And I said, yeah, I can do that. I can trust in God that this is all going to be okay. And as soon as I did that, I passed through all these rooms quite easily, and I wasn't afraid. And I went through them almost like that they were just made of air. And finally, I arrived very low in the earth, and it was a small room of size of maybe a small bedroom in a house. And my dad was sitting at a small round cafe table, similar to the cafe tables built for two in a lot of these coffee shops.
Yep.
Small round table. He's sitting there all by himself. And I went up to him and I said, Dad, I said, have you seen the light of Christ? Has he ever come to you since the day of your death? And he just shook his head real sad, like, no, he just wanted me to understand that he's been in this kind of precarious condition, that there's really been no light since the day he died. And so that had been about 2.5 years. And I hugged him. He stood up and I hugged him. And when I did that, there was from around the corner in the room, almost like where a closet would be or something, a tall man walked from around it, and he had a beautiful, soft, white, glowing light on his face. And he looked at me and nodded at me very peacefully, and he, without talking, more through like a mental, kind of an ESP, he said, your dad's going to be okay. He's in good hands. I'm watching after your dad for you. And as soon as I had that calm assurance from him and the peace that he was there, then I turned around and I came back through all those rooms. I came back above the skies of L.A., and then my spirit went back through the long window of my bedroom at the penthouse, and I was back in my body. Mm-hmm. And when I arrived back in my body, my heart was pounding as if I had just run a race, even though I physically had not done what I just did.
Right.
So that was kind of like another encounter that was building, and that's what prompted the spiritual director to say, okay, he goes, you're being exposed to these things. Do you think someday maybe, you know, your dad's going to get out of this situation? He's going to be at a higher level, there's going to be the light in his life. Do you think he'll ever find out about that? So that was kind of like really a profound question, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So I could tell more about that, but I don't know how much time we have.
Well, yeah, we have about 5-7 minutes, something like that. You know, I know that you went into seminary as part of your process, and I know that you moved into working with the homeless. And if you could quickly tell that part of the story, I think that kind of rounds out. You know, we could tell stories for a long time, but I want to hear that too.
Well, I just had no other interest. The next day after the near-death experience, I had to go back to just a regular job of business field and the stuff I was doing, and I had no interest in it. I was completely rewired in just 24 hours.
Yep.
And one night, two or three nights after the near-death, I was sitting up in my home office, and I was at the computer, and I heard an auditory sound in my ear, and it said, "Go help the homeless."
Mm.
And it sounded to me that it was from the other side, that God was speaking from the other side, and he wanted me to go help the homeless. So I said, "Well, God, if this is you talking to me, I don't know how to go help the homeless. I don't know any homeless people, and I didn't know really anything. I didn't know where to go." And so I left it at that. So that was on a Thursday. On Saturday, they asked me to come over to church where I had been praying every day. And they said, "We have a meeting on Saturday. Would you come to it?" And I said, "Okay." So the lady at my meeting, at my table sitting right next to me, was the vice president of this huge 300-bed homeless agency in downtown.
Mm.
And I looked at her and I said...
This is in L.A., right?
Yeah, exactly. Homeless. And her agency was like from where I was in the new lofts in downtown. It was like 5 blocks from me.
Wow.
And I told her a little bit about what happened. And I said, I feel like I'm really supposed to help the homeless. And she said, I'll introduce you to our volunteer coordinator. And then I end up getting hired and left my job and ended up initially doing 20 hours a week as a volunteer and not even worrying about the money. I just figured the money would come somehow because this is what God asked me to do. And then that's how I meet the lady that says Jim in my office.
Right,
and all that stuff starts happening to me. So then eventually I ran into a guy who coordinates people going into seminary. I run into him at a subway stop one day, and I told him a little bit about what happened, and he goes, "Yeah, maybe you should think about going to seminary." And I said, "Okay." And the next thing I know, I'm signing up to go. They tell me 2 or 3 weeks before I was supposed to show up. I still owned, I was publishing a color magazine in downtown LA. It was like a color shopping guide magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden I said, I prayed one night on a Sunday. I said, "Well, if you really want me to go to seminary," I said, "you have to help me to sell this business because I have to be at seminary in 2 weeks." And that was on a Sunday. On Wednesday, I got a phone call from somebody I never knew or met, and they said, "Can we have lunch today?" And at the end of lunch, they said, "Can we buy your magazine?" They wanted to buy me out.
Yeah, I'm laughing because that kind of stuff goes on all the time when people are in that situation and ask for help. So,
isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, I couldn't believe it. It's like at the end of lunch that day, we had a deal, and they were cutting me a check within 2 or 3 days after that.
Wow. Wow. Amazing, amazing story. We only have a few minutes until the close. I want to make sure you get to give the website for the book, for the information about the book, but also the website for the work that you're doing.
Oh, yeah. The website, of course, for the book is really easy. It's just the title of the book, proofoftheafterlife.com. And then our work with the homeless, they've allowed me to start a new, kind of like what Mother Teresa had started for Calcutta, is the church allowed me to start a new group that we just go under the bridge where homeless are hiding out, kind of the poorest of the poor. They let us go now to these, and they let us form. So a group that we formed is called servantsofthefather.org, and they can visit, anybody can visit us and our work at servantsofthefather.org.
Fantastic. So it's proofoftheafterlife.com and servantsofthefather.org.
Yes.
So thank you so much for that work that you're doing. And thanks so much for sharing your incredible story. You know, if we had more time when we were sitting over coffee and we could chat, I can tell you my story and the pieces that are the same and the pieces that are different.
Very different,
and the story,
yeah.
And the stories of other people that I know, and, you know, and the patterns. One of the things I love about this show is talking to lots of different people coming into this change in reality from different directions, but seeing the similarities in the story and how the lessons are the same, and even though they're colored by your background.
You know, David, the strangest thing, like even a few days ago, I went at 9 o'clock at night, I just go to the grocery store. Nobody knows me. I'm looking like a regular guy. I go there just to get something simple like a loaf of bread. And a lady runs up to me as I'm going out the front door. And she says, stop, stop. She said, there's a 9-foot angel standing behind you.
Yeah.
And I've never met this lady in my life.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we could go on and on about angel stories, too, and I would love to do that. There's a conversation we can continue. Yeah. So thank you so much for being with us. My guest is Brother Gary Joseph from Los Angeles. Go check out the book and his work at the websites that he gave. Thanks, Gary. And my name, in case you forgot, is David Franklin Farkas. My website is househealing.com. And if you go there, cleverly hiding on the contact page is every conceivable technology for getting in touch with me, including a link to my online scheduling calendar. I do a complimentary 20-minute introductory scan and assessment, see what's going on with you and whether my work will help you. So please come find out. So until next week, next Thursday, this is the Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere on Empower Radio. See you next week.